Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:38 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 4th, and we had a pretty strong day on stock markets. Gold was pretty weak, though. So there's certainly some speculation going on about the speed of the recovery. There was some data came out today about the pace of different countries in how well they're doing in rolling out vaccines. We have to remember that politicians all over the world, they tied the reopening of economies to the rollout of vaccines. So the only two major economies that are very well ahead in terms of getting everyone vaccinated, or at least enough to achieve herd immunity this year, are the UK and the USA. And that's helping to support the dollar. It's also helping to support the pound. What we've certainly seen, though, is that there is increasing demand for small cap shares. The Russell 2000 popped on the upside today again, and it was at additional new highs. When we look at the Russell versus the Nasdaq, I think it's a pretty interesting ratio, because when we can see this over the long term, the Russell has been trending down against the Nasdaq 100 for more than a decade. It's just begun to demonstrate support. It's pushed back above the trend mean, but more importantly than that is that it's found support in the region of the lows from back in 2000. So obviously, during the tech bull market in the late 1990s, the Nasdaq outperformed in an incredibly robust manner. So this also helps to highlight just how much of a big move we had back then. And contrasting what we have today with back in the 1990s is probably still a little premature. We're not quite at the bubbly stage yet as when we were back then. I think probably the bigger comparison would be something approaching 1998, where we had the big shock of the Russian debt default, the bailout of long-term capital management, the flooding of the market with a load of additional liquidity, and the tech sector took off like a rocket. And this year, it's less so about the large caps taking off like rockets, although the S&P 500 was also in positive territory in here today and pushing on to new highs and closing up there. It's a pretty impressive advance, but it's the SPACs that are moving like it is 1999. We've seen a really profound move in the performance of these newly listed companies over the course of 2020 and into 2021, and it's encouraging an increasingly large number of these private companies to list. They have foregone the temptation to list for most of the last decade, and that was because they didn't have to. They had ample access to liquidity to go out there and capture market share. Well, now they are starting to list. Well, what can we conclude from that? It's simply that they got a shock with the seizing up of the market in the early part of 2020 with the pandemics. A lot of companies said, well, golly, if we're not going to sell now and try and list on the stock market. And obviously a lot of private equity investors were thinking, well, it was time to take some risk off the table with some exits. So that's exactly what we're seeing now. What I find interesting is that there was a really quite a lot of hubbub about the Airbnb listing and how it was going to be a remarkable performer. But one thing that we can see is that the performance of SPACs tends to be greatly enhanced by the first day moves. That once they come out of the blocks, they don't generally tend to rally a lot. Although Airbnb is up approximately $50, so that's about a third over the course of the last 10 weeks. And it continues to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows. So there is still some enthusiasm for the newer ones. And when we look at the ones that listed earlier than that, like Uber, well, Uber now has finally been able to surmount its IPO price. And it did that back in November. So it's been consolidating above that level. Of course, Uber is a company that should benefit enormously from reopening. People have just not been traveling around. They've been curtailing their commuting, their socializing, and in the event that we do open up, well, Uber will certainly benefit. But when we think then about, well, why is the dollar rallying? And it was up again in here today, and the euro was quite weak. I think what we're starting to see from investors is that they are parsing the difference between the countries that will be swiftly opening up or reaching herd immunity through vaccination and those that won't. So Europe in particular has been way behind the curve in terms of securing vaccinations for its population. And they've resorted to a number of measures to try and curtail exports, but the reality is that they didn't put their orders in quick enough. It's really quite similar to what happened to the automotive companies when the semiconductor manufacturers told them that if they didn't place their orders, they were going to lose out on manufacturing capacity. They ignored it, and a number of those automotive companies ran out of chips to put in their cars. And it's both of these instances are emblematic of the lack of foresight in a number of areas, that when people know what the future is going to bring, they can plan, but most people don't do that. They don't think about how the future might be different from the past. They simply base their forecasts on what they've seen already. And when we think about what that means for markets, it's very similar, because ranges give way to trends and trends give way to ranges. If one were to look at all the history of the euro, for example, ranging now for 5 years, well, the obvious point is that it has been it's back at the upper side of the range, so it's probably going to go all the way back down and test the lower side of the range. But then we can also think about the fact that we are in a period where there is no country wants a strong currency, and some are willing to do more than others to achieve their goals of a weaker currency. Well, Europe has been more activist in talking down the value of the currency recently. The Bank of England has been particularly quiet. They have told banks that they should prepare for negative interest rates, but also said that they're not on the cusp of doing it. But the euro is falling against the dollar. It's also falling against the pound, and it's shown the other way around here with the pound rising. The pound has also been in this lengthy base formation. Of course, the Bank of England doesn't particularly want to have a strong currency either. And one thing we certainly know is that there has been a great deal of printing. So when, for example, we think about what the UK has done, well, the Bank of England has basically one for one compensated compensated for the massive amount of spending deployed by the government. And now they own about a third of the gilt market. And gilts rose in here today. Bond yields right across the board were in positive territory. So that is also representative of this desire by investors to push the limits. The 10-year gilt popped on the upside here today. It's now back above 40 basis points. It would suggest that we're back in something of a risk-on environment, that investors are not as willing to hold hedges against risk, that they're willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the countries that are furthest along in the vaccination process. Well, the stock market in the UK was quiet in here today. The FTSE 250 remains the, I think, clearest representation of the domestic UK environment. So while the media are full of these stories about the need for massive investment in replacing cladding because of fire risk for council houses and lots of homeowners, and also talking about the clear need for additional spending by governments, the reality is that investors are willing to bet that the UK is going to be okay. because the currency is appreciating, the stock market's doing well, and bond yields are rising. So what, in fact, people are starting to price in is that there may be inflationary pressures starting to rise. And that's particularly true if we do move into a swifter pace of opening up in the UK and the USA. Well, then, of course, we can think about how all of that is affecting gold. Gold prices were down $40 today, back testing the low from in November, but it is now below the trend mean, and it is going to need a clear upward dynamic in order to check momentum. We've definitely seen that there have been more downward dynamics than upward dynamics since August. So there is some downward bias to trading. There's a sequence of lower rally highs, and I think realistically we're not going to see a lot of enthusiasm for gold until it has broken that sequence of lower rally highs. But we also have to, I think, consider that the yield curve spread is rising. And it was above 100 basis points yesterday, and it held that move in here today. So we know that the cost of servicing all of the additional debt that was taken out in 2020 is going to rise. It's going to put additional pressure on central banks to help out governments. It means that they will have to buy more bonds. There will be a lot more bonds issued. Eventually, we're going to have to see that there will be some kind of measure to constrain the expansion of the yield curve. But we don't have it yet. And as long as we don't see substantive action to do that, well, then the Federal Reserve is just going to watch and wait. As long as stock markets remain firm, they don't have a rationale for intervening. It's when stock markets begin to roll over that pressure will build on them to intervene. And they're looking for, because they don't know, and I think this is one of the biggest points of all about what has changed in the Federal Reserve system. It's simply that they've given up forecasting. They're going to let the market tell them where to intervene. So they're going to let yields rise. They're going to let the yield curve expand until they reach a choke point. And it's at that point where liquidity does start to represent an issue. That's when they'll start to provide assistance once more. And I think investors understand that, which is why stock markets have been generally firm. The other countries that should do well as we come out of the coronavirus are those with large, young populations. India is certainly in that category. And younger populations certainly don't suffer from the coronavirus as much as older people. So India's markets were in positive territory again in here today. When we then think about what's going on in China, they continue to try and provide additional liquidity to the repo market. They did see it seizing up last week, so they are going to provide as much liquidity as is required to keep it functioning in a proper manner. But the days of abundant stimulus from China, I think, are probably coming towards an end. But the stock market remains really quite steady. Now, when we think about what's the other way of looking at the prospect for additional opening up and reflation, well, the oil price broke out 3 days ago and it has been up now for four consecutive days. So that suggests that commodity investors are at least willing to give the benefit of the doubt to additional upside. And Brent is now up to $58. So we've had a pretty profound move over the course of the last 9 months, particularly since WTI went negative for a brief period, and we're coming back up towards that magical 60 level, which is the break even for a substantial amount of unconventional oil and gas. But the more important point is that it is out on the futures curve where we need to see $60. And if we think about front months, well, hedging tends to go on up to a year out. So maybe January 22 up to about $60 would be where we'd see a significant uptick in additional drilling, because they could hedge their exposure. As we then think about the wider market, well, one thing has been clear about the Biden administration is that he's using the presidential rights and has been ruling by decree, much more so than any other president before him. So the big question now is, what's going to happen in terms of the cannabis market? Because the Alternative Harvest ETF has clearly now broken out of its base formation. It's up about 50% in the last 6 weeks. And there is obviously the potential that investors will benefit when the USA does eventually remove the federal prohibition on cannabis. And obviously there are arguments both for and against that. But one thing I can certainly attest to is that I injured my shoulder playing tennis about 3 months ago, and it's been bothering me since. And it hasn't been getting better. Well, I started rubbing cannabis oil into it 2 nights ago, and I've definitely noticed that it has helped. It's certainly not a cure, but I think that is the main point with cannabis oil. It definitely alleviates pain, and that's particularly true for chronic conditions where there's been a huge reliance on opioids. So that is a clear market, and it's a massive market when we consider just how many people suffer from chronic pain conditions. Now, when we then look at the biotech sector, the new sector that is starting, or within the biotech sector that's starting to gain a lot of excitement, is liquid biopsies. And that's something that Illumina has been able to gain a foothold in with its acquisition of Grail. So that has helped to drive the share up and out of what was effectively a 2.5 year range. And provided it can hold the breakout, well, then we can conclude that it's back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. The share has been prone to lengthy ranges. Part of the reason for that is because it is still wedded to its manufacturing cycle. This is the same kind of pattern that we used to see in Microsoft. Then Microsoft adopted the subscription business model. It streamlined its revenue stream, and the share took off. So I do wonder how long it will be before Illumina moves towards a subscription business model to streamline its own business, because at the moment what it sells are machines, and obviously if it were to lease machines and provide the service, I guess it would be sequencing as a service, then that could be a very substantial smoothener in terms of their revenue streams. And generally speaking, since Adobe initially did that with its Photoshop apps, well, then the share really hasn't looked back. And it was also in positive territory in here today and bouncing from the region of the trend mean. Microsoft has also continued to push on the upside. So this adoption of a subscription business model has certainly been something that has been rewarded by investors, because it makes companies' revenues more predictable. Well, as we then, if we think about where we are, there's obvious risks from rising bond yields, but they're perhaps not as urgent as people wanting to bet on countries that are likely to come out of the pandemic faster. So we're in an environment where there is more tolerance for risk, and that's particularly true in the retail sector because margin debt has been surging higher. This isn't an easy metric to keep an eye on any longer, because they don't report it easily. But it's certainly not on Bloomberg any longer. But we can definitely think about the fact that margin debt today is where it was back in 1999 and in 2007. So when we do start to see people experiencing stress from higher interest rates, well, we know that then that is going to be a risk factor. It pretty much means that the continued bull market that we have on Wall Street is extraordinarily interest rate sensitive. And with bond yields rising, then it's only a matter of time before central banks have to intervene and try and suppress those yields, or we really will have a problem. That's why I continue to think that what we're seeing in the dollar is an unwinding of a short-term oversold condition, but that it will translate eventually into a continued downtrend. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.